To persons who are in ignorance. Tvatparavim. Of your transcendental position. Anatmani. In the material energy. Atma. Yourself. Atmana. By yourself. Vasi. Appear. Vitatya. Expanding. Mayam. Your inconceivable energy. Shishtau. In the matter of creation. Eva. As if. Aham. I, Brahma. Jagataka. Of the universe. Vidane. In the maintenance. Eva. As if. Tvam Eshaha. Yourself. Ante. In the annihilation. Eva. As if. Trinetraha. Lord Shiva. Translation, two persons ignorant of your actual transcendental position, you appear as part of the material world, manifesting yourself by the expansion of your inconceivable energy. Thus, for the creation of the universe, you appear as me, Brahma. For its maintenance, you appear as yourself, Vishnu. And for its annihilation, you appear as Lord Trinetra, Shiva. Trinetra means three eyes. Tree, nature. Just so you understand, that's why that refers to Lord Shiva. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Shilpaupad, Shilpaupad, each eye. Although the impersonal Mayavadi philosophers think that the demigods are illusory, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu are stated here to be expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and are thus real. Indeed, they are extraordinarily powerful controllers of the universe. The ultimate truth is a supreme and beautiful person. And thus, throughout the creation of God, we will always find the personal touch. So, Janatam Tvat Paravimbanatmane Atmatmana Vasi Vitatjavayam Shristav Vivaham Jagato Vidhana Ivatvame Shanta Ivatrinetra Pa. So, Omagana Tumiranda Shaganjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmeditam Yena Tasmai Shigurve Namaha. So, here's to the Prabhupada, as he does in many other cases, refers to the word Mayavadi. So, I think we should really analyze these different words, like Mayavadi, impersonalist, voidist, and try to understand the distinction. So, technically, Mayavadi, Maya, of course, in this particular instance, means illusion. So technically, Mayavadi means someone who thinks that everything is illusion. And ultimately, he may believe in an impersonal Brahman, and that impersonal Brahman, which the Mayavadi considers to be supreme, somehow falls into illusion and considers himself to be the Jiva soul. Or Vishnu or whatever. So that's really what Mayavadi means. So in other words, everything's illusion. All varieties illusion. So the problem with that philosophy, according to Srila Prabhupada and our previous acharyas, is that if you accept that philosophy, and of course that's also Shankaracharya's philosophy, Lord Shankaracharya, who is actually Lord Shiva, if you accept that philosophy, then you're saying basically not that Brahman is supreme, because the word Brahman means, you know, the best or the supreme. You're saying that illusion is more powerful than Brahman. So there's an inherent contradiction. Does everybody understand that? There's a contradiction in saying that Brahman is an illusion. Because, therefore, there must be that second energy, that second force, that puts Brahman into illusion. And, or if you say Brahman decided to be an illusion, then you're saying that Brahman is not impersonal. So there's another contradiction there. Does everybody understand? So there's two problems with that philosophy. There are many other problems. So this is technically called Brahman Vivarta. Vivarta means illusion. And actually there's an interesting book by Jagadananda Pandit called Prema Vivarta. So Prema Vivarta means that when one is in love with Krishna, one is an illusion too. What does that mean? Because one forgets that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God and becomes overcome with the different bhavas or emotions. That's called Prema Vivarta. And it's described that Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they really relish this book by Jagannanda Pandit, Prema Vivarta. And you'll find that book mentioned in quite a bit in Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Jiva Dharma, Prema Vivarta. So anyway, so that's called Vivarta or illusion. So that's Mayavad philosophy in a nutshell right there. And Mayavad philosophy generally is equated with impersonalism, which is, you know, pretty similar. So apart from that, there's voidism. Voidism is more like the modern understanding of Buddhist philosophy, where ultimately everything is void. Of course, that's not really what Buddha taught. Unfortunately, the Buddhists, they misrepresent Buddha. Buddha himself simply taught that we're not this material world, we're not this material body, and then you should become detached from it. That was Buddha's entire teaching. Buddha's most famous sermon is a sermon at Deer Park. Obviously, there was a park full of deer at that particular time. And so Buddha, in this particular sermon, of which we have pretty much the understanding of what he said, and sometimes even the words of what he said, because it wasn't that long ago, something over 2,000 years ago. He said that we're not this body, we're not this world, we're not this, not this, not this. So that's called the Nyeti philosophy, where you negate everything. But he didn't actually say what we were. He didn't actually say anything about the eternal soul. And so then later on you find many of the Buddhists, they actually came up with their own philosophies, such as this whole philosophy of bodhisattvas. Some of you may have heard of this before. Bodhisattvas means great saints who come down to this world, which we agree too. There are great saints, they're called Shatavesh avatars, who come to this world. So, anyway, so that's impersonalism and voidism. And there's another word to be understood in this particular regard, which is called parinam. That's another Sanskrit word. Parinam means basically that something becomes transformed. So another version of impersonalism is called Brahman Parinamvada. So just like you have Mayavada and Brahman Parinamvada, means that Brahman becomes transformed. So we are not advocates or believers in that. Brahman is never transformed, the soul is never transformed. Although it appears that our soul becomes transformed or changed in nature due to its contact with matter, the example given in the Vedic literatures is like the reflection of a heavenly body like the sun or the moon on a body of water. It appears like it's trembling. Like you look at the body of water and you see, oh, the moon is trembling or the sun is trembling. But it's not trembling. It's the water is trembling. So the soul's is not actually in matter. It's actually completely transcendental. And its presence in matter is represented in such a way so it seems like the soul is changing in nature. So Brahman never changes. And we are Brahman too. Vishnu Shakti Pura Prakta Chetrakyatya Tata Pura Vidyakarma Sangenya Tritir Shakti Ishute. There's two aspects of the Lord's tattvas that don't change at all. That's the jiva soul and also his spiritual energy and also him. You know, Vishnu, the energy. Anyway, but what actually gets changed is the material energy. The material energy is endlessly mutable, endlessly transformable. Anyway, so these are what Srila Prabhupada is speaking about here. So why is it, let's talk about, why is it that someone would be ignorant of Krishna's actual transcendental position? And that's due to the envy that one has of the Supreme Personality of God. As the Vedic literature state, Krishna Vadhir Mukha, that the soul at a particular juncture turned his face away from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And because he turned his face away from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then he becomes covered by this illusory energy, which has two forms, which are throwing and keeping. Maya or illusion throws you into illusion and keeps you in illusion when you want to get out. And so these are the two aspects. And the soul is under that control because of the soul's envy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this also involves the whole question of how did we get to the material world? You know, how did the soul come down, or how did the soul fall into the material world? And of course you have people say that the soul did not fall from the spiritual world. The soul was actually, basically, this is a concocted philosophy. The soul was actually born and then just came to the material world. But we were actually Krishna conscious living entities, as Srila Prabhupada states. And then we decided to come to the material world because of our envy of Krishna. So, anyway, so these are some of the points here. I don't have too much else to say about this particular verse and purport. And unless someone has a question, we go on and read the next verse. Questions? Comments? About anything we said? Oh, Jairam, congratulations. You're a grandfather for another time. Grandpa. So, if no one has any questions, we'll read the next verse because it's not much information here that I could talk about. I mean, I could talk more about impersonalism and voidism and tell stories about Shankaracharya. So, next text, and I'll just read this and I'll read the translation of the report. So, Reshvishivishatatayvan Rishapi Tiryachuya Yadakshvapitejanasya Janmasatam Durmata Nigrahaya Prabhovedatta Sadanugrahaya Cha. O Lord, O Supreme Creator and Master, you have no material birth, yet to defeat the false pride of the faithless demons and show mercy to your saintly devotees, you take birth among the demigods, sages, human beings, animals, and even the aquatics. So purport by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. Among the demigods, Lord Krishna appears in such forms as Vamana, Deva, among the sages as Parashurama, among human beings as Lord Krishna himself and as Lord Ramchandra, and among animals as the boar incarnation. Lord Krishna appears among the aquatics as Matsya, the gigantic fish. Indeed, the plenary expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are innumerable as the Lord relentlessly comes down within the universes to smash the false pride of the atheist and show mercy to the saintly devotees. In another verse, the Lord never appears. Since he exists eternally, his appearance is like that of the sun, which is always present in the sky, but which periodically appears to our vision. So, here we're talking about the purpose of the Lord's advent, which is something all devotees know about. Yada yada hi dharma sha glani bhavati bhavita vyutanam dharma sha. Tadatmanam shri jamiham. Krishna comes down to destroy, annihilate the miscreants, establish religious principles, and protect the devotees. So that's what we call the exoteric reason for the Lord's advent. And the Lord has his esoteric reasons. And I mentioned this before to the devotees, but it bears telling again. Exoteric means something that's really apparent. And esoteric means like hidden or personal reasons. So Krishna's personal reasons for coming down are different than the exoteric reasons. So his exoteric reasons are what we just described, killing the demons, etc. And the esoteric reasons are for his enjoyment. Because Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, and whatever he does is for his enjoyment, and he is independent, as mentioned in the first verse of the Bhagavatam, he's Swarat, and interestingly enough, is also up to kama. Swarat means he's independent, he doesn't need to do anything. He doesn't need anyone. So everything is given to him because he's up to kama. Whatever he wants, he gets immediately. That's God. And not only does he get it immediately, he doesn't have to ask for it. Because his energies and his pure devotees know exactly what he wants. They are first-class servants. A first-class servant knows exactly what the master wants and does it. Second-class servant knows what doesn't know what the master wants, but he likes to do it after he's told. Third-class servant has to be told and he doesn't like to do it. Tenth-class servant doesn't do it. So Krishna's energies, particularly the internal potency of the Lord, of course, jiva souls don't always do what Krishna wants, but Krishna's energies, they function in that way as first-class servants. They do what Krishna wants whenever he wants it. So he doesn't have to come down to the material world. Just like you hear about all these demons, of course, Ravan, Kumbhakarna, which everybody knows about. You hear about Aranyakashipu. You hear about Shalva, who was a demon who had an airplane, a special airplane that could not be detected by radar, like they have nowadays. So these demons could be destroyed by Krishna's devotees and Krishna's energies. Yamaraj is perfectly capable of killing any particular demon. But Krishna comes down so he can enjoy different pastimes that he doesn't have an opportunity to perform in the spiritual world. Because in the spiritual world, there is no killing of demons. There's no demons. There's a little bit of, let's say, rumor that there's a deity in the spirit, a demon in the spiritual world. Little rumor. For example, in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there's devotees in Vrindavan, in the spiritual world. Goloka Vrindavan. And Krishna is taken out of Goloka Vrindavan to go to take care of Kamsa. There's actually no kamsa. There is no kamsa. But Akrura comes to take Krishna. And he takes Krishna out of Goloka Vrindavan, apparently. Of course, Krishna never leaves Goloka Vrindavan. And everyone is bereft. And then Krishna returns for shortly after that. Not like in the story we have in the Krishna book, that Krishna didn't come back. So there's a rumor of demons, or a talking of demons. But you never actually see demons. Or you may even have a devotee who acts like a demon in the spiritual world, but he's not killed. You have a devotee who acts like the Keshi demon. Keshi is the horse demon that Krishna killed in the material world, and the Keshi god, by putting his fist into the horse demon's mouth and choking the demon, and the demon died. So in the spiritual world, a devotee appears to be the Keshi demon. And Krishna, instead of killing him, Krishna just jumps on his back and rides him around and gives all of his friends horseback rides. There's a demon or a devotee who appears to be the Arishtashura demon. Arishtashura is the bull demon. And Krishna, instead of killing him like he did with Arishtashura and making Radhakund and Shamakund, gopis of course made Radhakund, Krishna tames him and he gives him to Lord Shiva as his bull. Because Lord Shiva is riding on a bull, you know, Nandi. So in this, so many nice stories are there in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita about how devotees sometimes act like demons, but not really like the devotees who act like demons in the material world, like Ravana, Kumbhakarna, etc. And they're giving Krishna pleasure in the spiritual world. But there's no serious fighting. It's all playful, like friends. So Krishna, he likes to have sometimes serious fighting. And so his serious fighting means to experience some of the indirect rasas that he does not experience in the spiritual world, such as ghastliness. Ghastliness means when something is so abhorrent, disgusting, like rivers of blood, like you have Parashuram mentioned here. What did Parashuram do? He created lakes of blood. Can you imagine that? Any of you work in the hospital, you know what blood is? It's extremely impure, right? You don't want to touch someone's blood, you can get a disease. Anyway, so can you imagine like a whole lake, several lakes of blood with heads floating on them? That headectomy. I can't hear what someone said. So that's Parashuram. So that, you know, that's Krishna's enjoyment. Or when Krishna fights in the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna doesn't fight, but when he sees that happening in the battle of Kurukshetra. So all these things are Krishna's enjoyment. Or the Matsya avatar is mentioned here. Just like some of us, we like to swim. Of course, in Fiji, hardly anyone gets swimming lessons, right? Because the parents have these dreams that their kid died in the water, right? So they don't give their kids swimming lessons, so the kid dies in water because he hasn't had swimming lessons. Kind of stupid, isn't it? We've taken the devotees to the beach sometimes, and nobody goes over their ankles because their mother is afraid they're going to die. And they probably would if they went over their ankles. So anyway, Krishna, like people in this material world, what do? They put on scuba tanks. You know what a scuba tank is? The air tanks, you know. They're not oxygen. Actually, one person passed away because instead of giving them oxygen, they were a patient that needed oxygen, they put a scuba tank on them. The scuba tank is not oxygen. It's just the same mixture of air we have here. So the poor person passed away because of that. Because they ran out of oxygen, the oxygen tank, and they gave him a scuba tank. So anyway, that has nothing to do with class. So the point is, people like to swim. People like to surf. Of course, Prabhupada called surfers sufferers. You understand? There's these people like big waves. They come here to Fiji too sometimes, certain seasons, and surf these big waves. But there's not, that's a natural tendency for the for a person. He wants to swim. Or so someone, and Prabhupada said the surfers will are sufferers, and he also said they'll become fish in the next life. So anyway. And then sometimes people want to fly like a bird. So they have this thing called hang gliding. You ever heard of hang gliding? Hang gliding, I don't know if they do that in Fiji. That's where Fiji would be a great place for hang gliding, because you've got all these nice mountains and everything like that. Always wanted a hang glide. So anyway, so but isn't it, you know, sometimes we think, oh, we could fly like a bird, it would be really nice. Of course, nowadays, of course, people get flying lessons. It costs, I was just talking to a devotee who's taking flying lessons here. It's costing him every hour he pays $450 just for permission to be in the plane and fly it. Pretty expensive. So we'd like to fly in the air, right? So Krishna has bird incarnations. Krishna has fish incarnations. Krishna has lion, half lion incarnations. Krishna has a boar incarnation. In fact, Krishna has incarnations in every species of life. And he's enjoying like that. Like little children, they put on costumes to enjoy. So Krishna's the enjoyer. And that's the real reason Krishna comes down to this material world. To enjoy different leelas that cannot be fully manifest in the spiritual world for a variety of reasons. I mean, the spiritual world, Krishna doesn't have a fish incarnation. In fact, Srila Prabhupada said that the non-human incarnations of the Lord are only present in the material world. So there's no matsya loka in the spiritual world. That's only in the material world. Of course, when Krishna assumes that particular personality, it's the same body, of course, then it's just as spiritual as his manifestations in the spiritual world, but it's just Krishna's enjoyment. So we have to see like that. And so that means that Krishna is always wanting to enjoy and is always enjoying. What is our business? To give Krishna enjoyment. That's what Krishna wants. And then when we give Krishna enjoyment, then we become happy. And when we try to give ourselves enjoyment, it doesn't make Krishna happy and it doesn't make us happy. Because we're connected with Krishna. That technical explanation or non-technical explanation that Prabhupada gave, how the hand is connected to the body and the hand gets enjoyment when the body, the stomach is satisfied. So in the same way, we get enjoyment when we satisfy Krishna. And so Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. So anyway, any questions or comments about giving Krishna enjoyment? What gives Krishna the most enjoyment? Anyone know? What? Serving his devotees. And yeah, serving his devotees. This is this one who says, my devotee is not my devotee. And teaching Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, or helping those who are teaching Bhagavad Gita. Bringing people to Krishna consciousness. Krishna says, no one is more dear to me than he who teaches this Bhagavad Gita to the devotees, to others. So that gives Krishna enjoyment. That's the highest enjoyment. Because why is it give Krishna enjoyment? Because he loves us. As you see, another reference to the Brihad Bhagavatamrita is that you have this story of Gopa Kumar. Gopa Kumar is a little coward boy. And he runs into this Brahmin in Vrindavan, and the Brahmin gives him this mantra. It's called the Gopal Mantra. And he chants this mantra and experiences various locations, various positions in heavenly planets, in the material world, and even in the spiritual realm by Kunta planets. And ultimately he goes back to Goloka Vrindavan, and Krishna reveals to him that Krishna all along was his guru. Of course, it's not that every guru is directly Krishna. That would be impersonalism. Like many years ago, when Prabhupada was present, some devotees said, Prabhupada is Krishna. And Prabhupada kicked them out of the Hare Krishna movement. He said, there were four sannyasis, and they were preaching, Prabhupada is Krishna. Yeah, it's pretty stupid. Prabhupada is a pure devotee of Krishna. So Krishna revealed to Gopal Kumari, getting back to the story, he said, I appeared as your spiritual master because I was in anxiety. So when we are separate from Krishna, we're putting the Lord in anxiety. When the child is doing some rascaldom, I mean real rascaldom, normally rascaldom is cute when the child's small. But let's say the child becomes a criminal. It's so painful to the parent. It's so painful. I mean, you cannot imagine. Especially the mother. The father sometimes doesn't care. But the mother's love is just like, the father says, you know, send the kid to jail. But the mother feels this like intense pain in the heart, isn't it? Oh my God. Or when the child is well. It's just like the heart becomes so joyful, it starts beating, you know. It's always beating, but it starts beating. So Krishna's like the mother, you know. He's just like thinking of us. That's why he's in our heart. Like the mother has the child in her heart. It's just nice. Like if you're a mother, it's not only do you have super soul and the soul in your heart, you have your children in your heart. And so Krishna's like that. So he was in anxiety over Gopal Kumara. And he said, I was in anxiety. I was wondering, when are you coming back? And when he finally comes back, Krishna not only embraces him, but Krishna faints in ecstasy. And the other residents of Vrindavan are thinking that Gopal Kumara is a demon because he's made Krishna unconscious. They said, what kind of demon is he? You know, Krishna's unconscious. And the Balaram knows better than that. And so that's the love that Krishna has for us. So that's the best way to give Krishna happiness is ourselves. You become Krishna conscious. That means regular hearing, chanting. Especially hearing is the most important. Devotees neglect that. The whole process of devotional service, beginning with Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaran, like I said, begins with Shravanam. If you don't Shravanam, you're not going to be able to Kirtanam or Vishnu Smaranam. Do you understand? There's no way. You have to hear. And so, generally, we're neglecting the hearing process. We don't read Prabhupada's books regularly. We don't hear from Prabhupada's books. We don't hear Bhagavatam class. And therefore, basically, our mind gets diverted to so many things, the modes of nature. So we have to regularly hear Prabhupada's, from Prabhupada, or about Prabhupada. Just like last night, we were talking about Prabhupada, which is another type of Krishna katha, talks about Krishna's devotees. And I was amazed that devotees were very attentive. I've never seen that before in Fiji. Generally, you know, look around Bhagavatam class, people sleeping. But they were very attentive. So we have to hear about Prabhupada and hear Prabhupada's instructions and read Prabhupada's books. And so when you Shravanam, then you can do Kirtanam, Vishnu, and that gives happiness to Krishna. Like you're hearing Bhagavatam class nice now is giving happiness to Krishna. Krishna's happy. Oh, they're hearing about me. Also, I was listening yesterday to Prabhupada speak about how Krishna is has the original egotist. He likes to hear about himself. It's like we like to hear about ourselves. Like if I say, oh, Sumukh, you're so nice. I was talking to him last night. I remember in the old days, we came here to Fiji. You were a nice young man. He said, oh, thank you for talking about me. So Krishna likes to hear about himself, so that gives Krishna pleasure. And then we become Krishna conscious, Krishna becomes grateful, and we bring others to Krishna consciousness. And that's how we give Krishna pleasure. And that's what the Lord wants. That's the Lord's pleasure. His pleasure is love, loving exchanges with his loving entities and his energies. So we got 4 more minutes. Any questions or comments? Another question, comment. Please ask questions. Yes. Yeah, like Krishna says that. Those are there a cousin of demoniac species of life, lower and lower, never to approach me. Yeah, Krishna says that. Good question. What's Krishna's love if someone is cast into demoniac species of life, sent to hell, you know, all these other nice things described in the 5th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam? Well, what do they say? Spare the rod, spoil the child. You ever heard that before? Sometimes you need some tough love. I remember, I'll tell a story about Srila Gurudev Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Once upon a time, there was a devotee here in Fiji. You probably guess who it was. Who Tamal Krishna Maharaj wanted to work in the United States and become the temple president in Dallas. I think you can understand who it is. And he said, I want you to go there. And he said, and he was reluctant. And he said, if you don't go there, you're not my disciple anymore. Nityananda told me that story. So that's tough love. Oh my God. And Prabhupada also, when he wanted to send Tamal Krishna Maharaj to China, you know the whole story that he said, you know, because Tamal Krishna Maharaj came out with the concept of China first and said, I was just joking. Prabhupada said, no, you weren't joking. This is Krishna speaking through your mouth. You have to go to China. And he said, I'm not going. And Prabhupada said, if you're not going, I'm taking away all your service away from you and you're just sitting here in Mayapur chanting for the rest of your life. Oh my God. For someone who's active, that's very difficult. And so, that's tough love. So, first of all, whatever suffering we have in the material world, and this may appear to be a heartless statement, is not, we're not really suffering. It's our attachment to the body. It's just like our mental attachment to the body, or, you know, our subtle body attachment to the gross body. I mean, of course, I'm not going to say that I think like that when I'm at the dentist. You're at the dentist and he's drilling your teeth and you say, oh, no. I'm not thinking I'm not the body. I'm thinking, get me the hell out of here, Krishna. So, but basically, our suffering and enjoyment is due to attachment. So even if you're put into a hellish situation, the soul is never affected. Although it appears to be affected because of the reflection point that I mentioned before. So it's not really that Krishna's cruel to you. He's giving you an experience like Narada Muni gave Magrari an experience to wake him up. Magrari got that experience of seeing himself killed, like a virtual reality type of experience, by all the animals he was half killing within that particular lifetime. So Krishna does that. Krishna does whatever is best for us. Even for a devotee, Yashaham Anugrinami Hurishye Tadanam Shanai. For those who I especially favor, I take away impediments in devotion from their devotional service. And then there, I mean, if someone really is on the fast track, you know the fast track, what that means? Like if you join, let's say, FEA, you know, and you go on the fast track to become the minister or something. That's a fast track. If you're on the fast track, then you really have to work hard. So if someone's on the fast track of devotional service, Krishna takes things away. And so it's really painful sometimes. Like even Prabhupada talked about that. Prabhupada's a pure devotee. But Prabhupada talked about how his family life... I mean, actually, someone devotee last night asked me the question. They said, yeah, someone read the Prabhupada and Leelamrita, and they said that Prabhupada was very cruel to his wife. And I said, no, his wife was very cruel to him. Every time he tried to preach, she interfered. She stole his Bhagavatams and sold them for tea biscuits. And I gave the example, the comparison, that if someone here took someone's Bhagavatams and bought kava with it, that would be the same thing. Just so you can understand, you know, the comparison, the metaphor. It's exactly the same. Can you imagine? Like if any of you who have a husband or a wife, and if your husband or wife did that, oh my God. I mean, Samukha, if your wife took your Bhagavatams and bought kava with it, I mean, she's a good devotee. I'm just saying theoretically, you can just understand this. So, but that was Krishna's arrangement. And Prabhupada was thinking, this wife is not so nice in the beginning. Let me have a second wife. Because, you know, you're allowed to have two wives or three wives or whatever in India at that particular time. Prabhupada said, let me have a wife who's more compatible. And Prabhupada's father said, no. Because Prabhupada's father was a pure devotee. Prabhupada said, this wife is very good for your spiritual life. So, you know, look at the external things that Prabhupada had to go through. I don't want to say they're miseries, but, you know, challenges. And it's not that, you know, Prabhupada was lying when he said that he was horrified to see the dream of his spiritual master telling him to take sannyas. Because Prabhupada was a very responsible person. He had a wife and children, and there's natural affection for the wife and children. And yet, he had this dream, and he saw Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur beckoning to him, come with me, take sannyas. Prabhupada said he was horrified. Prabhupada's not lying. He's a person. So, and Krishna arranged all those things, and if Krishna hadn't arranged all those things, what? We wouldn't be sitting here today. And then ultimately Prabhupada said Krishna took away his family, and now he has so many children who are obedient. Because all of Prabhupada's disciples, I mean 99% of them would do anything Prabhupada said at a drop of a pin. Who has children like that? I don't think anyone has children like that. Mayapur, do you have children like that? They just say, Daddy, Pitashri, whatever you want, we will do. We will serve you the rest of our life. No way. And they say, you know, please serve us. It's reverse. But so Prabhupada said, you know, Krishna's rewarded him. But he had to go through so many painful... You don't think it's painful what Prabhupada went to? Yes, he's a pure devotee, he's transcendental, but he has feelings too. Don't think that a pure devotee has no feelings. And so, of course, that's a pure devotee. But let's say for the conditioned soul, it's necessary for whatever that... The punishments are restorative, not retributive. There's a difference. Restorative means to bring someone to the right frame of consciousness, not to make him suffer. The whole idea is not to make the conditioned soul suffer, but the whole idea is to do what's necessary. Like, and oftentimes I give the example, you go to the hospital for an operation, and it's going to be painful. But if you don't go, it's going to be more painful. Like, you know, I had a hernia operation. Of course, it wasn't so painful, but anyway. But anyway, it was a little bit of pain. But if I hadn't gone, I would have been worse. You know, with strangulated intestines, you know, lower intestines or something like that. It would have been far worse. So, you know, little pain to avoid a lot of pain. And the greatest pain is separation from Krishna. That's the greatest misery. Separation from Krishna's devotees, too. That's the greatest pain. So let's endure some pain to be with the devotees and to serve Krishna. And let's be compassionate to those who are suffering. But sometimes it takes, you know, what do they say? The school of hard knocks. You ever heard that expression before? School of hard knocks. Anyone's heard that? Yeah, of course. Such a much has heard the expression. School of hard knocks means you learn by getting knocked around. And that's the material world. It's a school of hard knocks. Eventually, you learn, get a little traumatized in the process, but eventually you learn. Okay, on that happy note, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.